Welcome to the Football Project. My name is Lucas Abreu. I'm here with Vivek Barnwell. And Vivek, we've got a guest today.
That's right. We have a special guest. Doug Plank is here joining us. So some cliff notes on Doug. He grew up in small town Pennsylvania, played college football at Ohio State in the early 70s under Coach Woody Hayes, and then got drafted by the Chicago Bears and immediately became a key contributor. So much so that Hall of Fame coach Buddy Ryan developed a special defense that highlighted Doug's skills as a player. And that defense became known as the Bear Defense and more famously known as the 46 Defense, named after Doug Plank because he wore number 46. So Doug had a decorated NFL career as a player, became a championship coach, coaching everywhere from college to NFL to arena football as head coach. And after football, became quite the entrepreneur and businessman, using many of the skills that he used to be successful in football to be successful in other areas of life. But more than those things that Doug has accomplished, I wanted to share a little bit of a story of how I know Doug personally. So I was in my first season of college football, coaching intern at Ohio State. And soon after I got there, Doug joined the coaching staff after coaching defensive backs. I think you were with the Jets, Doug. And I knew that Doug was the person that the 46 defense was named after. And I was familiar with the 46 defense. I first learned it in high school when I played football. I had a defensive coordinator who loved the 46 defense. We ran the 46 defense fairly often. I knew it from playing Madden, like the video game. And so when Doug, when you joined the staff, it was a like kind of a surreal moment for me. Like I was sitting next to you in meetings. I'd be like, holy crap, like I played in a defense named after this guy. This dude has a whole defensive package in Madden named after him. And I'm getting to hear his thoughts on football. Like, this is wild. The thing that I quickly learned about you, though, was that you didn't really care about all that stuff, like all the accolades. The stuff that I noticed that you really cared about were like three things in particular. One, you care a lot about people. Like, first and foremost, you treat every person with respect and dignity. Like, every person in that building, whether it was the janitor or the head coach, you talk to them the same way. Even like a runt coaching intern like me, you let me watch film with you. You teach me what you knew about the game. You taught me what you knew about coaching philosophy. And I just learned a lot from you about how to treat people, especially in the football world. Not only did you love people, but you loved the game. You just love sitting down and watching film. You love breaking things down and not just like the X's and O's part of it, but also like the little nuances of like offensive linemen. If they have their hand in the dirt like this, that's a tell of his, that's a run play. Like all these little things that just, I think, helped me be a better coach. And then you just love to give it your best in everything you do, whether I was playing or coaching or business or getting one more rep on the bench press, whatever it was. No one could ever say that you cheated the game or cheated anything you ever did. And that energy that you brought to the coaching staff, that energy you brought to everything you did, it was so contagious. And it definitely encouraged me and inspired me. So Coach Plank, thanks for joining us today. We are so excited to have you on.
Well, it's a pleasure. Obviously, I'm sorry that I didn't respond sooner. I try to do things as much as I possibly can. Pleasure to be here.
Oh, man. Well, we are excited to have you, and we know you have a lot on your plate. So thanks for making time to be on here with us.
Yeah, thanks for being here.
Hey, we wanted to start off by just asking you, you played at Ohio State. Can you share a little bit about your experience playing for the Buckeyes under Woody Hayes in particular?
Well, Coach Hayes was really dynamic when he came and visited my high school. I was just so surprised when I was called out of an English class down to the office, and I go down there and Woody Hayes is in the building, and I was absolutely shocked. And this was 2 weeks after another incredible story happened in my life. When I got to my senior year, I kept hearing about all these very valuable players, high school players, getting all these letters and notifications from schools around the country requesting their services. Namely, that they would sign four-year scholarships. And I received a couple letters, but not very many, maybe one or two. So I started a campaign myself in writing letters to colleges around the area. You know, I came from Penn State, Pennsylvania, so I wrote to Penn State, Ohio State, you know, and all the schools, Pitt, University of Pittsburgh, the Naval Academy, you know, they had a football team. So I think it was a total of 12 schools. And I just told them what I did, what touchdowns I did. I was a quarterback in high school. But most importantly, I wrote a letter each game of my senior year to Joe Paterno, the head coach of, at that time, of Penn State. And I would start each, I had these letters and I thought, you know what? I want to make them special. I want to make them so special, this coach will never forget these letters. And I would start the letter by saying, "Dear Coach Paterno, I really, 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 really want to come to Penn State University." And I had never heard or seen a letter like that. If somebody sent me that letter, I would find out who they were, where they were, and what they wanted. And I did it 10 times for the 10 games my senior year. And I never heard from Coach Paterno until December 15th. After the season was over, the college, the high school, I'm called down to the office. And down at the office is Joe Paterno, the head coach at Penn State University.
Wow.
And he had these letters with him, all my letters.
Aww.
And he said, "Doug, I have never received letters like this."
That's cool.
And he said, I'd like to recruit you, but I can't because, you know, I've already went ahead and committed to other players. So he shook my hand, walked out of the building. A week later is when Woody Hayes showed up with his assistant coach, Earl Bruce, and they offered me a scholarship. They said, "Joe Paterno was here 2 weeks ago, right, Doug?" I go, "Yes, sir." And he was very interested. And that is how I got to Ohio State. I mean, as crazy as it sounds, you have to do things, you have to do extraordinary things to expect anything out of this life, whether it's effort, whether it's education, whether it's performance. You know, I wanted to be out there all by myself in what I was doing and determined that given an opportunity, I would make them glad they gave me a scholarship.
Man, that's awesome. That's kind of typifies a lot of your football career is making the most out of the opportunities you got. And even if the door was slightly cracked open, you did everything you could to get your foot in the door and make an impression on the people who are there. And it definitely seems like you left an impression on Joe Paterno. Definitely seems like you left an impression on Woody Hayes and Earl Bruce that day when they came to offer you a scholarship. And it seems like you left quite the impression on the Chicago Bears too. You got drafted by them in the 12th round. So back then in the NFL draft, they had a few more rounds than they do now. But how did it come to be that you ended up getting drafted by the Chicago Bears? And what was the draft process like back then?
You know, it was really tough. I mean, and I started out really, I'd never been on AstroTurf in my life when I went to Ohio State. So the very first day, someone grabbed me and tackled me. We were just supposed to have a walk-through practice. Walk-through means you walk through the drills on offense and defense. Well, there's maniacs. And Via, you know this. There's maniacs on football teams. So when I ran through this play that we were running over in the stadium, this person, I can't remember exactly who it was, came diving in and hit me by the side of my knee. And he ruptured my cartilage, my meniscus cartilage, and partially tore my ligament, my MCL. And so that was the first day at Ohio State. The second day at Ohio State, I was having surgery done over at Riverside Hospital. So done was my freshman year. And I came back my sophomore year, recovered and rehabilitated. For the next 3 years, I tried as hard as I could to try to crack that starting lineup. And I just couldn't do it, Dee. You know, there were great players in front of me. There was two first-round draft choices in the year that I was there. I mean, the next guy, there was a fourth round and a fifth round. So the starting four defensive backs, you know, they all got offers to go to the NFL. And only because I was able to show up in one game against Evanston because of an injury to one of the players in front of me, you know, a minor injury, I played against Northwestern and had the game of my life, interceptions, forced fumbles, tackles on kickoffs, and a scout from the Chicago Bears was there. And that is how my professional career started.
Wow. That's awesome.
That's amazing.
I've met a lot of people in my life that came from small schools that made it in the National Football League, but they were stars in their small school. Maybe they weren't drafted. You know, there's a lot of colleges out there. I don't even know how to spell the name, you know. And there's still players, but you know what? They started. They were stars. I've never met a player in my life that ever sat on the bench and then got drafted in the NFL and started the first year he was there and led the team in tackles, which had never been done by a rookie ever in the history of the Chicago Bears.
Wow.
And yet I was still, I was the reserve guy at Ohio State. I watched a whole bunch more games than I ever played in.
Man, that's awesome. So like speak a little bit more about that. Like you said, most guys who get drafted in those later rounds, like they typically struggle to make the team, but you not only made the team, you led the team in tackles. And it seems like you earned Buddy Ryan's trust right away. In fact, Buddy Ryan invented the 46 defense and he named it after you because you wore number 46 and you were such a vital piece of that defense. And so kind of take us through that journey of how you went from late round pick to one of Hall of Fame coach Buddy Ryan's most trusted players on the Chicago Bears.
Yeah. When Buddy Ryan came, it was my, I had played 3 years under a prior coach, Jack Pardee, who went and played, he went to the head coach. He became head coach of the Washington team, NFL team. And so Buddy Ryan came in with the next group of coaches and he was a defense coordinator. And he looked at me the first couple of weeks and he said, "You're no free safety." He said, you want to get up there and hit everybody. You want to hit the linemen. You want to tackle people and get sacks on the quarterback. He goes, "I'm looking for a free safety that, you know, stays back there, roams around, tries to get interceptions, doesn't hit the receivers when they come across the middle." and he kind of made like a joke out of it. Like, well, those were skills that I learned. I remember my last year at Ohio State, I had Coach Hayes and also the defense coordinator stop by one of the practices that I had. This is after the season was over and we were going to the Rose Bowl. Nobody knew about this V other than the people around me. There was one play in that game, the 14-11 game. It was the senior game where we beat Michigan. We're going to the Rose Bowl. We tied. But they just felt like they didn't feel comfortable in putting me in there because on one play, I hit a receiver so hard, I knocked him back 7 yards. Wow. Flying back. But you know what? He didn't go off his feet. He stayed on his feet. And he continued to run another 20 yards for a touchdown. And they said, "Doug, you know, we lost confidence in you. We lost faith in you because we just didn't feel like you could tackle." I thought it was ironic because the next year I go for the Chicago Bears and I lead the team in tackles, which he never been done before. So I thought, okay, you know, they think I can't tackle. I'll show them. But no, I never got a chance to show them because the last game that I played was only for kickoffs. We played USC in the Rose Bowl. And I really thought that was going to be the final game of my life in football. And that's how I end up cracking the – I cracked the helmet in practice, hitting one of our own offensive linemen. He was like 290 pounds. And I broke his face mask also. I flattened it. I'll never forget. John Bozic said, "Doug, you want this helmet? Because it's no good anymore. You flattened the face mask." I said, "Well, maybe this is for my last week of football. Maybe I might want to keep it." But, you know, anyway, I think lessons in life are very valuable. And that was one of the lessons for me. Never stop. Keep going. It might not be football. It might be another occupation the next year. But fortunately for me, it was. And I only needed the door to be cracked. B, you talked about me being recruited in the 12th round. They don't have 12 rounds anymore, as you know.
Right.
And I found this out when I went to the Jets. The Jets would only use the scouts up until round 10. On round 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, they would let anybody inside the organization make a draft choice, including secretaries, janitors, people that, you know, took care of the building, ran the parking lot. So that's how most of these people that were in this double digit designation for the draft, that's who picked them. Not the scouts, not the coaches. That's what they felt. That's what they thought of some of these draft choices that were picked in these later rounds. And there's a reason. Why did they eliminate those choices? Because those guys never made the team. The NFL decided to drop those late round draft choices because it was just a matter of time before they were let go. Hardly any of them ever made the NFL. So I put myself in a very lucky position to be one of those individuals, 12th round, 291st pick, player picked that year. I mean, like I said, they were down to the janitors and secretaries choosing those players on these respective teams.
That's amazing. That's really cool.
Yeah. Sometimes I wish that I would have the freedom to make some draft choices for my favorite teams.
So some of our listeners, they might have heard of the 46 defense from playing Madden. Maybe they've played in the 46 defense before to some degree. Can you tell us a little bit about what is the 46 defense and how did it come to be? Like, how did it come to be named after you and what your role was in it?
The 46 is my jersey number was 46. And so when one day we went into practice and our defensive coordinator, Buddy Ryan, drafted a defense on the board, and Buddy was never into calling people by their name. You were called by your jersey number. When he drew this defense up on the board, he didn't put names there. He put numbers there. And he brought me from the safety position right up to the middle linebacker position. And he went over everybody's description of what their rules were going to be in this new 46 defense, linemen, linebackers. I was to make all calls. I was supposed to recognize the down and distance. I used to get a call from him during the game. It was called AFC, automatic front coverage. I had memorized every defense that he told me to call in the field position, the down and distance, and the personnel in the games. When they ran in motion, you were to call different plays and different defenses. And your defense and your line charge could change as many as three times on just one single motion. So I had to study this and understand it, know it. And the guy behind me, Gary Fensick, the other safety, he called the coverages. So I called the line fronts, the line charges, how we're going to attack their offense. And, there was a lot of responsibility with it. And so that was it, 46 defense. Nobody really acted like this was going to be life-changing or anything. But little did everybody know that when this thing got put into place, not only was it a dangerous defense to play against, but the Bears over the next couple of years made incredible draft choices also to really make this defense something that like nobody's ever seen before. And 50% of the quarterbacks in 1985 never finished a game because they were knocked out of the game by this defense.
Wow.
You know, most defenses are read and react. You read what the offense is doing and then you react. This was totally different. It was every play in that 46 defense was an attack defense. Everything was destruction about this defense. And guys started playing at superhuman levels. You know, when you called this defense, they were like so fired up. And the one thing I liked about the defense, no lineman ever came after me as the middle linebacker because we had six men on the line of scrimmage and every lineman was covered.
Yeah.
So there was no offensive lineman blocking me. I could run anywhere I wanted through any hole on that defense and hit somebody.
It seems like this defense was tailor-made to play with your style of play. It seems like it just fit very well with the way that you'd played.
Yeah, I would just laugh to myself. And I never had such a good time playing football as I did those years during that 46 defense. I came to a point in time where I had already, had so many injuries and concussions. I just physically wore my body out. I couldn't incur another knockout. I couldn't incur another operation. With the four joint replacements I have right now, both shoulders and both knees, is an illustration of how much I use those body parts.
Man. Well, you bring up something really, really important. You know, I didn't have the privilege of getting to watch you play live, but I've watched your highlight tapes before. And you weren't the biggest guy on the field, but you were exactly how you describe yourself. You were everywhere on the field. You were a menace. You threw your body around. And in fact, there were quite a few hits you made back then. It seemed like that if you would do that in today's NFL, you would for sure get fined and then probably suspended as well for the way that you were hitting players. But I'm curious to hear your thoughts, like especially when you describe your injury history too. Like, what are your thoughts on how the game is called today? with an emphasis on player safety. Obviously, the quarterbacks are protected more than most, but what are your thoughts on how the game's called today in regards to player safety? Are you a fan of how the game has changed in that way? Do you have issues with it? Would love to hear just what you think about it.
You know what? I still really enjoy watching football, and yes, mm-hmm. it's different, but I think it's for protection of the players, and mm-hmm. the most important person on that football field is the quarterback. And I think it's important for the quarterback to remain standing and have, mm-hmm. you know, not trying to replace quarterbacks, because how many games have we all seen where a new quarterback comes in, a reserve quarterback, and the efficiency of the offense drops dramatically. And mm-hmm. the team is not the same team. They're mm-hmm. not the Kansas City Chiefs, you know, or if Mahomes would go out of the game, the Kansas City Chiefs would not be the Kansas City Chiefs anymore, because they don't have anybody like him, you know, as a backup. And I think the NFL started realizing, listen, we are in the entertainment business. And yes, there's masochists out there that love to see the defense destroy the offense and carried off on stretchers, but that isn't the best thing for our game. And the best thing is for our game is for those players to play the entire game and get an opportunity to show their skills in the first quarter, second, third, fourth quarter, yeah. rather than being hurt and ejected. And that went on for a few years, you know, in the 80s mostly. But, you know, I think immediately after this 46 defense got put into effect, and it was so devastating for opposing players, the rules started changing. And they started changing rather dramatically. And there were suspensions. There was not only penalties, you know, as far as yards on the play, but there was ejections. There was fines. There's a whole host of things that go with that. And I think that in the injuries, especially, you know, a lot of the cost of running a professional football operation is workers' comp. Workers' comp is a huge cost for organizations with mm-hmm. employees that are constantly getting hurt. The very nature of the employment lends itself to have surgeries and have body parts that are compromised and never the same. And the same is true even, I think, of you know, the brain. And, you know, I think you continually use your body as a spear in terms of running into opposing players. It's after a while, you can laugh at having a concussion, like most people do in that mm-hmm. sport. But after you have multiple concussions, and you stop remembering players' names or where you're going or, you know, mm. what you have to do, you know, how do you get home at night? Mm. It's things like that, that it stops being funny and it starts getting into the legal world of what's the compensation going to be. I think that is where the league is right now. I think they're trying to do their best to make it as safe as possible, not only through equipment, but also through rules and regulations.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. I've definitely noticed that too. They've changed quite a bit, like some of the kickoff rules and the punt rules, like you were talking about how dangerous kickoff is. And it seems like, oh yeah, they tried to change a lot of rules to try and make it hopefully a little bit safer for players.
Yeah. There's, you know, and I'm not very proud of the fact there was two players that I played against during my career in the National Football League. Because I wasn't playing very much at Ohio State other than kickoffs. There were two players that I hit that never played again. Mm-hmm. Their injury caused them to be done with the National Football League. I'm not very proud of that. Mm. At the same time, I'll say this. I don't remember one NFL game that I played in that there weren't people chasing after me. Mostly bigger people. They were all bigger people. You know, how many 195 pound players are there out there right now,
right,
running around at 5'10 and a half? Not really. I mean, if I would see another player the size of me, I would say, where's that squirt? Where's he? Where'd he go? You know, what position does he play? Now you're being asked to start tackling fullbacks that are 230, 240 pounds coming through the hole. The line of scrimmage, you know, at least sub 5 second speed, 4.7, 4.5 in the 40. These guys are fast, big, and it's a rule of just physics. If you don't have the mass and the weight and the size to go against another object that's coming at you fast or faster, then you're probably going to end up on the back end of this collision. And sometimes I won battles, sometimes I didn't.
You bring up an interesting point, like when you were talking about your role in the 46 defense and how you were tasked to be doing things that typically safeties back in your day weren't doing. I think you and I were talking about this before. Like, it seemed like you were kind of a little bit ahead of your time in terms of what you were doing as a safety and doing a lot of different roles. But would be curious to hear your thoughts, like as a former safety, how has safety play in particular changed over the past few decades? Like, what do you notice when you're watching safeties play now versus even like 10 years ago, 20 years ago?
I would say the absence of the running game. You know, the running game was such a big part of football when I played with Walter Payton, you know, who's a fall Hall of Fame player. He came in the same year I did. And and like I mentioned Earl Campbell already. There were just so many, you know, O.J. Simpson was still playing. There was so much of football was still a running game. As you and I both know at Ohio State, I don't know how many passes, certainly no more than 10 passes a game. I mean, Woody Hayes, the coach, really never wanted to call a passing play in the world. He said two things would happen, you know, it was incomplete or it would be intercepted. So that's his idea of why he never was throwing the ball. But, you know, the game has changed. And with the game changing, the requirements for the individuals playing the game have changed also. They're bigger, they're faster, in many cases, they're even heavier, but they're more athletic. They have a higher vertical jump. They have a higher bench press. They can squat more weight. You know, everything about them has improved because all the training techniques have improved and all the weightlifting and training, you know, all the other things and the diet. So, you know, these guys are all, you know, once the season's over, they're all attending specialists trying to help them just get better and improve their physical as well as their mental skills. So it's a different game from that standpoint. The players are different. And also the rules and regulations are all together different also.
I'm really curious, what do you like kind of key in on? Where do your eyes go? What's your attention drawn to when you're watching a game?
Well, you know what? So much is passing now. So, you know, they don't really try to trick anybody right now because they just throw that pass. It's going to be a pass. Yeah, they could always run the ball, but you know, they run the ball at the quarterback position now like they never did before. You know, almost every quarterback is a runner now. He can run with the ball. If there's everybody's covered, he can come out of the formation, you know, back in the pocket, take off running. I still try to diagnose plays. It's hard on television though, because you can't see all 11 players. You know, whether they have a short split, long split. Everything now is pretty much just about execution. The teams that win are the teams that have the best athletes. It's not the best game plans like it used to be in years past. Game plans matter. Yeah, absolutely they matter. But, you know, the level of skill on these players today, they can cover so much ground in a quick area. It's not so much about trying to pretend to the defense that we're going to do something we're not going to do. Now it's pretty much it's a skill matchup. There was very slow whistles in the NFL when I first got in there, 1975. What do I mean by that? You could hit somebody and he'd fall on the ground. But you know what? There was no whistle. Well, you were taught to play until you heard the whistle. The rules were just very loose. And here's the other thing. It all depended on who were the officials. We used to get a report each week on who the officials were and what their mode of operation was in terms of blowing the whistle and what calls they would make. So we not only got a scouting report on the other team, we got a scouting report on the officials. Wow. If we got a scouting report on the officials and it said, these guys never call penalties, then look out. It was going to be chaos that weekend. We were going to let it rip.
That's pretty amazing. Coach, this has been really insightful. This has been really helpful. Everything from your playing days at OSU in Chicago to your study of the game and your tenacity to play the game. This has all been really great. And just really appreciate you making time to connect with us, making time to share your insights, the things you've learned. I think our listeners are going to really benefit from getting to hear a lot of your insights. Coach, for our listeners, if there's any ways that they want to find you, is there anything they can do if they want to reach out to you or learn more about you?
Sure. Well, if anybody would like to ever reach out to me as far as a message was concerned or something, my email is very, very easy. DougPlank46@gmail.com. And if you have any questions or any other interest on any particular topic, please don't hesitate to send me a text or message, email.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Thanks for giving our listeners that access, Coach. Really appreciate it. Man, great getting to have you on. Lucas, any closing thoughts?
No, yeah, I just thank you so much. That was really insightful and super cool to hear. I appreciate you coming on today.
Well, thank you. Thank you. And I really appreciate guys like you to be able to reach down and find out, you know, it's more than just catching and throwing a football. It's teamwork. You know, we all get knocked down on the ground. And sometimes as I was falling through the air, someone hit me from the blind side. I'm wondering, geez, I never saw that guy coming. My point is the comparisons between sports and life is so great. I guarantee you that if you can be a success in sports, you can use the same habits, the same drive for success in life, whether it's education, whether it's with a relationship, whether it's being part of a family, a father, a mother, whatever the case might be. I learned so much about life and winning and having a successful excursion.
Amen. Amen. That's a good word for us to end on here. Well, thanks a lot, Coach. All right. So that was Doug Plank. Lucas, what'd you think?
Yeah, that was awesome having him on. I feel like it's so easy nowadays to hear from players who are currently playing because of podcasts, social media, appearances on TV. And so to hear from someone who played in the 70s and the 80s was really refreshing.
Yeah, man, absolutely. I'd heard a lot of his stories before, but I think what's sticking out to me more so this time is how much he talked about injuries. I love football. I love watching, loved coaching, loved playing, but I absolutely hate injuries. And Doug shared a lot more about that than I've heard him talk about before. I think just about every football game, someone gets injured, like whether it's in a moderate way or an extreme way. So maybe it's a muscle pull or maybe they need to be carted off. And I think we can kind of grow numb to that as people who watch football. You know, Doug didn't share this during the podcast, but he shared this with me like earlier in the day when we were talking on the phone. He'd gone to a couple of reunions lately, like player reunions for the Chicago Bears. And then I think there's another one with Ohio State. And he said he loved getting to see everyone and connect with them, but it was really hard for him to see people who had a lot of residual effects from their injuries, like a lot of folks in wheelchairs or having trouble walking or having trouble even like speaking, and just the toll that playing football took on their bodies. And I think that's something just most people don't realize, how much players go through, how much they need to rehab and take care of their bodies just to be able to play on game days.
Yeah, I feel like on game days, it's so easy to see a picture of their face on your screen and know that you need them to get over 55 and a half receiving yards, or you need them to get, you know, 7.4 fantasy points, and kind of dehumanize them in a way that you are just ignoring literally like all of the pain that they're going through, play in, play out.
Yeah. Yeah. It totally just makes a player turn into like we just view them as like a prop bet sometimes. And it takes away from getting to actually watch the game, I think, in an intelligent way. Like the stuff that you and I are excited about with this podcast, about like being able to like read a defense or read an offense or get into like some of the strategy stuff, when we're just trying to see if our player got the ball or how many yards they got or whatever, it keeps us from getting to watch the game in an intelligent way. And so I'm really interested to see, like, you know, the NFL just made a couple pretty big rule changes for player safety, like they're making a change to the kickoff return rules. They're making a change to like tackling, in particular, outlawing the swivel hip drop tackle. What do you think about those rule changes?
Yeah, I'm really interested to see how the rules affect the game, because I feel like a lot of players aren't really in support of it because it's how they tackle. And when you've got really big tight ends or running backs and you just need to put your weight on them to take them down, it's going to make defense a lot harder, which will make the game more entertaining with more points potentially. And that also kind of is the case with the NFL kickoff rule change. What I'm most excited about that is that it will hopefully bring back the kick returning position as a way to really get on a roster. Because I feel like right now, too many sixth round running backs who are just fast or cornerbacks who have speed are just back there because they need a body. And I just can't wait for the kickoffs to mean something again, because right now I think 1 in 5 get returned. And so hopefully it's just more of an opportunity for people to enjoy the game. And also so many injuries do happen right now and nobody's ever watching. So if injuries are going to happen, they might as well be watching. No.
It might as well. You know, if nothing else, it'll be entertaining. I think there'll be more points put up. And I think, like you said, the kickoff play will be relevant again.
Yeah. But yeah, thank you so much for bringing Doug on. That was a blast. If you guys listening have any questions about this conversation or any thoughts that you want to share, feel free to email us at thefootballprojectpodcast@gmail.com, or you can connect with us on social media down in the episode description. And yeah, Vake, thank you for talking. And this was a blast.
Yeah, man, this was a blast. Thank you. And we'll talk to you later.
All right. See ya. Bye.